Hi, my name's Jenny Town, and I'm here with my daughter, Bree Town, and we're here to share about our family journey with cancer.
Welcome to the Discover MontCom podcast, where we look at the communities, businesses, attractions, and people that make up MontCom County. Here's your podcast host, Dwayne Weed.
Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Discover MontCom podcast. And as you heard, we're going to talk about a family's journey with cancer. And it started many years ago, but I'll let my guest walk us through that. And I think the reason I reached out to Jenny was there's people out there that are battling this right now. And even though it may not go away, I asked Jenny if she would come in with her daughter, Bree, and if maybe share a little bit of hope that maybe somebody might have out there. So with that, I'm going to shut up and get with my guest today. So Jenny and Bree, thank you so much for coming in today. Let's start from the beginning, okay? So I don't know who wants to get the ball rolling here, but let's start with Mom.
Okay.
I would think that probably one of the worst things you could ever hear, well, A, when somebody says the word cancer, that's mm-hmm. probably the worst thing at that point. But when it deals with one of your children.
Yes.
You know, so can you put yourself back into what year was it? And
sure.
How did you come about knowing that that was going to be your start of your journey?
Well, I'll start here. I was at a track meet. Watching my son run. He was very fast. And my daughter, Bree, was running around playing, and she climbed the bleachers and laid her head on my leg. And then I put a coat under her head, and I took a picture of her. She looked so cute. And I remember she said, "Can you scratch my back?" So I reached my hand around and started scratching her back, and I thought, huh, she feels kind of warm.
Oh, okay.
And her sister was being treated for strep throat. So I thought, oh, no, she's got strep throat too. So I made that like a mental note, you know, obviously I'll keep her home from school and we'll call the doctor. So the next day I called the doctor and they were able to get us right in and took the kids down to Dr. Wakefield in Stanton, okay. Family care. And he did his exam and he pulled her lip down and he said, huh, she looks anemic. And I said, oh, okay. And then he said, what are all these bruises from? She had some bruises on her legs. Well, if you know Bree, Bree always had bruises.
Okay. You're very active.
She was a very active child. Very,
yeah.
I'd have to say rambunctious.
Okay.
Like if there was a tree, she was trying to climb it. So, you know, he said, I'm going to do some lab work. And he ordered up some lab work and we went to Wendy's, got some Frosties and went home thinking, okay, we're sick.
Yeah.
We're going to stay home for the weekend. And then at 10 o'clock that night, he called. And I answered the phone, and he said, where are you? And I said, in my hallway. And he said, how far away do you live from the hospital? And I said, about a mile. And he said, well, I need you to take Bree in because that lab work needs to be redone right away. There's something wrong with it. I go, right now? He goes, right now. And I was like, okay, 10 p.m., right now. So I got off the phone, and I said to my husband, we need to take Bree in to have her lab work redone. And I called my friend to see if she could watch my other daughter.
Yeah.
And we went to the Greenville Hospital, and they redid the lab work. And I remember the nurse handing me the phone, and she said, it's your doctor. And I said, hello? And he said, hey, Jenny, Dr. Wakefield here. It looks like some kind of leukemia, and either you can take Bree in your car right to Helen DeVos Children's Hospital, or she's going to have to go in an ambulance because her platelets are so low. And I was like, oh, my gosh, okay. Like, we'll drive her. I didn't want to scare her anymore. So we got in our car and drove right to the emergency room where they took us right up a back way to floor 9. And there she was for 45 days.
Wow. And I guess I remember that because you reached out to me at the time because you were trying to find anything to keep you occupied, Bree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whether it was your home movies.
It was. She wanted to watch them.
You know, mm-hmm. So I mean, now. You were how old? 5?
8.
You were 8 at the
yes.
time. So you go, you get your test, and they run you down to your first walk in maybe to Helen DeVos. Do you remember what were you feeling at the time, or were you just a kid and it was just kind of like, oh, I'm here, let's go?
I don't really remember much. I just remember being like in a hospital bed, moving to a room, I think, and throwing up on my side. That's literally all I remember from that night.
Okay. And so, you know, and you just got the news, so it's, your heart's probably somewhere down, not where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So at that point, you said it was a 45-day?
Yeah, they hung two bags of blood that night, and they hung some platelets for her to get infused because they were, her blood work was so off-skew, and they started chemo that night. They said if she would have fallen asleep at home, she would have never woken up.
Wow. Wow. Parts of the story that you don't probably share with a lot of people.
No, but it was really devastating to hear that. And then I remember the nurse or the oncologist, we sat in a little room and she said, your daughter has cancer. She has leukemia. We don't know what kind. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to find out. She said, hopefully it's this ALL and 95% of kids are cured and on their way in 3 years or less. And we were like, oh my gosh, okay. And my husband was so upset. He left the hospital and ran around the hospital outside just, you know, just crying. And I mean, it was just terrible.
Well,
and we were both in shock, just like, what?
Yeah.
We were just climbing a tree, you know, like.
All you did was lay your head
on my lap,
on her lap, but you knew something wasn't right.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the first step.
Yeah.
And the doctor knew right away that, hey, we got to take care of this.
He's a good doctor.
Yeah. And, and that, I think, and we were talking, you know, before we started this, that you probably got to know some of the doctors on a first name basis, you know. And so the 45 days, is there any memory from you of that 45 days that you could share with maybe somebody that might be entering in this, that they find out they got news and they have to be in that type of thing? Or don't you really recall?
I remember a lot of people were there for me, like a lot more than I could remember. Even if I was an adult, it was just a lot of people that were there for me. And for my mom and dad and everyone, and they'd reach out. Well, she reached out. Well, word got spread, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
So stuff like that. It's, I don't know really how to explain, like, if it were, I don't know if it's the difference with being a kid, though, and an adult.
Right.
Because I actually had a blast there. I threw up every day, and that was scary, and things just happened that you wouldn't expect to happen. I don't remember much, but I remember just like really, like, I guess like vivid things. I don't
Well, and that's okay because, you know, you were sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the treatments are probably making you sick. And that's, but you said if you weren't sick, they treated you well. You know, you used the word, I had a blast. You know,
and I remember I know it's a bad situation, but I made it, I guess, well, they made it, like the people around and the nurses and the what are they called? Special?
Child life specialists.
Okay.
They helped. And I had a teacher there that helped too, and I was able to stay caught up for the most part in school.
Right.
So, because some kids, like, well, me, I would worry about that. Okay. So.
Well, that probably starts with the parents, too.
Yes.
You know, and and as you were mentioning, there was a lot of people that were surrounding you, and you were mentioning it, too, Jenny, that it was like, wow. Before we move on, the overview of this whole thing, because now you are, I hate to ask people their ages, but you are now how old?
22.
You're 22. So this started when you were 8.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't the end of your journey, but you were talking ahead of time, you know, as we were leading up to this, that you wanted to share some thanks.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, I guess emotional support.
Mm-hmm.
Would you please do that now?
Yes. So we were very connected and very involved in our church. And I like to say that Bree had kind of a no-so hope. Like, she knew that if she didn't survive, she was going to heaven. Oh. So it kind of helped her have a really good attitude. And I was just super thankful for our community of people that stepped up for us. We had neighbors raking our yard. We had people dropping off meals at our house for whoever was at home. Mm-hmm. We have a visiting pastor that would come down weekly and spend hours with Bree, watching movies, praying. We just had so much support. The community, the business people put on their signs, "We believe." Yeah. Like, I couldn't drive anywhere without feeling like, oh my gosh, wow.
Which is probably good. You're probably driving around trying to hold the emotions back.
Yeah.
At the same time, feeling a
I
sense.
Felt very supported. I did not feel alone. The amount of people that wanted to help was overwhelming, actually. We had to kind of pass that off to other people and steer them into a direction to maybe help the whole hospital. Like, there was toys and stuff people were dropping off, and it was just very interesting to me. And I'm just so thankful.
Yeah.
I can't believe how people do it without a support system at all. And we had so much support. I mean, it was...
So the key is, you know, find the support.
And if... I've always been compelled to help people when I see that they need something. And I feel like if you feel the need to help somebody, help them.
Yeah.
I mean, the weirdest things meant so much to us. Like, someone gave Bree a cardboard box to turn into a prayer box. I mean, just the small thing. Someone gave her a mermaid costume, and she loved that thing. I mean, she rocked that tail all up and down that whole hospital. Yeah. I mean, just the weirdest, oddballest things were so impactful.
So the simple things.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing what you can do with a cardboard box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whether you make it a prayer table or whether you make it into whatever, mm-hmm. you know, it's doing that. So that, getting back to your journey,
mm-hmm.
So Bree, I'll direct this at you. You're 8, you go through this, and then you go back to school. I guess I have a question. Did people treat you any different? And can you kind of explain a little bit of that, please?
Yes. Well, when I left, there was a lot of support from my school, actually, and my teacher would FaceTime me, and the class would say hi. Everyone missed me, and they had a stuffed animal that was replacing me. I mean, it was like in place of my
monkey.
Of me.
Oh, kind of sat
something.
In your chair.
Yeah,
monkey in my chair.
And
was
they
a
brought
program.
It to lunch and everything. But I mean, I did have a lot of friends. But at the same time, there's always some that either are confused or, I mean, that's a young age, too.
It is.
There's a lot of bullies.
Okay.
So that was really bad.
So it's life.
Yeah.
I hate to put it all in.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact. So do you remember that time when you were finally able to walk back into that school? And do you remember it, or was it still kind of...
You mean in a good way?
Yeah, or? I mean, obviously, I wouldn't say obviously, but were you nervous? I mean, and I guess I'll ask you both that question.
Yeah, I don't really remember my first day back.
It was complicated because the type of leukemia Bree ended up having was actually a very rare form that is not easily treated, so she had a very compromised immune system. So we took her back to school for like a visit, but she couldn't really go back to school for a long time. So she missed part of second grade,
part of third grade,
but maybe a couple weeks.
Okay.
All of fourth grade because she relapsed. But it was kind of complicated. They did try, though. They did like a welcome back to school, Bree. And I remember they had a banner up somebody had made, and they included her in like the Christmas stuff. They had a Santa's secret shop, so she got to go when nobody else was in there because she couldn't really be around the kids.
Right.
It was building that immune system back up that kind of made it complicated, but when she went back, it was definitely hard. Very hard, emotionally and physically. Yeah.
Can you share? I mean, because
remember
Well, I remember I was able to have like a couple of my close friends around and she help me and show me. I mean, not show me anything. I mean, I knew the school, but just kind of be by my side and support.
They made special accommodations to make Bree feel more comfortable. Her principal at the time was Mr. Walsh, and he was just an absolute angel. And her teacher, I mean, the teacher, Mr. Springsteen, was amazing. All the teachers, Mrs. Sabinas. Just, they all went above and
beyond. I'd say the list probably could go.
Yeah, Lori Hostetler made extra time for Bree just to make, and she was a cancer survivor too.
Okay.
So she was happy to share with Bree about that.
And so she's 8.
Nine.
9, 10.
Yeah.
When it came back, 10 or 11?
This went through 8, 9, 10, beginning of 11.
She relapsed in fourth grade, so she was 10 at the time.
Okay.
And she had leg pain for a while, and they kept thinking it was something else and not really listening to her. And she ended up in a wheelchair and a walker, and it was not good. But then when she relapsed, it was really scary because then they said the only treatment left was a bone marrow transplant. And we were like...
So at 10 years old, you're getting bone marrow.
Mm-hmm. And when we first were at the hospital... We saw these paper rainbow chains on doors. And I said, what are those? And the nurse said, oh, you don't want to be in those rooms. That's the bone marrow transplant room. They block the door so nobody opens it.
Right. I didn't know
that. So that. And I was just like, oh, thank God we're not in that room. So then when they hung her paper chain, I'm telling you, I can't describe the emotions I felt that day. But it was, I mean, I was trying to remain hopeful, but it was pretty devastating.
I guess kind of another gut check.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, here we are.
Yeah,
we're back. And it didn't feel the same when
it
she relapsed.
I remember the feeling of the second time.
Before, it was like we knew, okay, we'll get through this and then we'll move on with our life. This relapse felt more like, okay, we might not get through this. This is looking really interesting. Like, things are changing. And people didn't act the same either. They were kind of like, what? She relapsed. I thought she was cured. Like, eh? So some of that support didn't come back.
Okay.
A lot of it did. And some of her friends, I mean, it was hard for her friends. I think it was very hard for them.
Well,
the journey kept going. The pain extended.
You're 10. Yeah. I mean, 10, you should be out eating mud pies and climbing more trees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing dance class and living the dreams, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All of that. So she's 10 going through that. How long did that bone marrow take? And
well, she went in November, and I think we came home in April.
Okay.
The next year.
And then so another year not being in school.
Nope.
It happened in February.
Well, but you didn't get to leave.
Yeah
So I mean, it so she comes home, probably immune system again, probably.
Oh yeah, worse this time, way worse.
Yeah. So now you've got to make sure that, you know, everything, I mean, your house must have been pretty sterile.
Yeah. My aunt flew in from Idaho and cleaned everything, bleached every Barbie, every Lego. I mean, one germ and you can send you back to the hospital for months.
Right.
So it was like, we were.
I do remember the house always smelling clean.
Oh yeah. We were.
That was weird.
We had a air scrubber. We had our air ducts cleaned. We had our car. I mean, everything was, even the car.
Right. Yeah. You know, and then you go out and you have to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you come in, you know, you kind of, okay, I watch too much TV, but I kind of picture this tent that you walk into.
Well,
decontaminate.
Kind of like COVID.
Yes.
But before COVID was, you know, we knew all that stuff beforehand. Like her sister, we would keep her home just so she wasn't exposed to germs that she could bring home, or change your clothes in the garage.
Right.
You know, wipe down the groceries in the garage.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, you're dealing with your youngest, but you also have two other kids that still need you.
Yeah.
You know, you must have been feeling kind of, you know, how did they walk through it? I mean, looking back, it's probably better than living through it.
Yes.
But looking back, how did the other children, the other kids?
They both experienced it in different ways, and it was painful for both of them in different ways too, but also frustrating, you know, because it was a long treatment and it affected our family deeply. Like, we couldn't go to weddings, we couldn't go to family events, we couldn't go roller skating, you know, we couldn't go out to eat.
Right.
It was definitely a very difficult time. We really relied on other people to fill in those gaps. Like, my son would be at a cross-country meet, and my brother would be there videoing and sending me a video.
Okay.
Or other people stepped in to be the cheerleaders for them. Same with our daughter. Her friend's parents stepped up. She had a teacher who really did a lot for her, Mrs. Fuller. She even allowed Madison to spend the night at her house, did cooking classes with her, and just tried to keep her occupied. But we really relied on that village, so to speak, to help us through it.
So there is hope, but it requires others. And as you said, you're probably on some sort of wild emotional roller coaster, you know, while trying to take care of the family, but at the same time, trying to take care of you, you know, and you just want to be a kid.
She did.
You know, you're probably tired of being sick and, you know, all of that. So, and you're kind of like, I guess we can kind of relate now because we've been through COVID. But before that, that same thing is what we all went through, not being able to reach out and see people and that type of thing. So 10 went to what age before things maybe started looking a little better?
The Discover Montcalm podcast wants to thank West Michigan Technology and Design Solutions, WGLM, 106.3 FM, DW Video, Blueberry Podcast Platform, and Business Growth Engine. Thank you for your community support.
Things did not look good for a long time because she had complications from the bone marrow transplant. She had a lot of good days, though, and we really tried to focus on having fun and finding joy in things, and we did. I mean, we went on her Make-A-Wish trip. We took her to Hawaii in between having to have her gallbladder removed. In between, she got a really rare form of like shingles,
where it was internal.
It was called a zoster
virus.
Zoster sign hepatitis. Horrible.
That was in sixth grade.
Yep, sixth grade. And that ended her in the hospital for 6 weeks, and they thought she relapsed again.
It was half of the school year.
And then she transitioned to Mary Freebed for months and had to relearn how to walk.
Wow.
It was horrifying.
That's...
Do you remember that?
It was like half of the school year.
It was a long time. It was probably, I would say more than half of sixth grade. The chicken chip.
I was on steroids and I looked completely different. I had to be in a wheelchair at school when I came back.
Just to make sure that you didn't fall, be safe?
Because my leg, I couldn't walk on my leg.
The virus wrapped around a nerve.
Ooh.
Completely took away her ability to walk. So she had to relearn how to walk. It was... Mary Freebed, thank you very much, because, wow, they are miracle workers there.
Well, it was the same leg that I complained about with the previous cancer.
When she relapsed.
So they thought it was cancer again. But it wasn't.
The thing they talked about, though, was the viral load, and if we couldn't get that down, it could have killed her. But they did IV antivirals, I mean steroids, and they were able to get it. Oh, it was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even.
I mean, just hearing it,
it was terrible. Is
like, but one of the things, and one of the reasons that you agreed to be here with your mom was there is hope, you know, and that it does take others and your friends and that type of thing. So that went through sixth grade. When did it start to maybe balance out a little bit? you know, I guess
maybe seventh grade,
eighth grade.
Wow.
Okay. Probably, and even still,
eighth grade was the most normal, best year of my life.
Okay.
Still till this day,
she still had to go to her transplant doctor, to her cardiologist, because now she sees a cardiologist, endocrinology, because there's, when you have a bone marrow transplant, a lot of things change in your body. I mean, she has to see a special eye doctor. I mean, it was just lots of different appointments all. So we tried to schedule them around the same day. So we were there like the whole day, but she'd have to miss school for that. And, you know, we heard about whooping cough at the Greenville High School. So guess who didn't go to school for a long time? Because she wasn't able to get revaccinated for a long time.
Well, because they're trying to get your immune system, mm-hmm. but every time they do something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, what do we put in this young person?
Yeah.
You know, because some of that stuff isn't good for you.
Well, they
you.
Didn't even know. They yeah. would say, we don't know. That her oncology team would say, we think this is what is a good idea, but, you know, honestly, we really don't know. I'm like, okay.
Well, medicine is a science, mm-hmm. and everybody's different.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Everybody handles, their body is different.
Yeah, and, you know, but you're here.
Mm-hmm.
So that, through, you said eighth grade was kind of your more normal year.
Mm-hmm.
So from second grade all the way through eighth grade, you were kind of on this major roller coaster.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So eighth grade, how did high school go?
I was still always known as the girl who had cancer. So that always stayed. Yep. That's still here. But everything else was kind of, high school was pretty normal.
There was a couple times she called me and she'd say, oh, they're showing a video or talking about cancer, and she would be a little triggered. But
oh, that was
stuff
in
like that.
That was in middle school.
Oh, was okay. it?
Well, you're young.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my goodness, you know, it's on the TV and we don't know, but you're going, been there, done that.
Yeah.
I've lived it.
But sophomore year and up, that was probably nothing cancer related at all. I mean, I did find out some, like, after effects about cancer with fertility that I eventually found out.
Okay. So side effects, things that they treat you for, create other problems.
Yes. Yeah.
And you were sharing a little bit of that, and that being one of the
my height.
Yes, and her growth got stunted, so she's petite.
Well,
in a good
rocket.
way.
Own it.
Easier to go on an airplane.
Yeah, but I could be your height.
I'm 5 foot.
Yeah.
You're 5'1".
Zero. No, I'm 5'0".
Yeah. Well, you know, there's probably some amusement parks you can't get on
right?
some rides.
Yeah.
But, hey, we're comfortable on an airplane.
Yeah. It's you know, usually easier to joke about it after the fact than, mm-hmm. than
yeah.
if you're walking through it. So you went through high school. You graduated. Then something else happened. Did it? It kind of reared its head once again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really weird because we just thought it was a earring infection.
So you told me you got your ears pierced.
Yeah, I got like more. I actually had 5. I don't anymore.
Okay, but that. All of a sudden, something wasn't right in your neck.
Well, my earring was actually infected, but then while touching my ear so much, which I don't really do that much. I mean, you don't really touch your ear much, but you never really touch right back in there. I felt a bump, and that's when I was at the doctor's telling them about my earring infection. I was like, oh, there's actually a bump right here. I don't know if you want to feel that.
Well, and they're and probably like, yeah.
And then that's how it started.
So what happened then? And you were what? 20?
21.
You were 21.
This was in the towards the end of 2024, November of 2024.
Okay.
They said antibiotics will take care of it. Okay. Did a round. Didn't work.
Yeah.
Still there. Got a little bigger. Little bit bigger.
Ultrasound, right?
And or they was did another round of antibiotics. No. That didn't work. No. And they did an ultrasound.
Yeah.
Biopsy.
MRI.
So it ended up being At what point did it turn into a surgery?
Let's see.
The biopsy?
When did you first go into the doctor? Do you remember?
What do you mean?
For the bump.
For my earring infection?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, I mean, because at that time, that's what you, because it happened, coincided with.
Was it June?
That was in June.
Okay.
And then this
went. 2024?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then it went to November 9th.
Was the surgery.
Ish.
Okay.
No, that was the surgery.
Oh, it wasn't?
I was just saying, I know, like, when it was all kind of ended.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I remember.
Yeah.
And that's, so, they found a mass.
They did a biopsy, and they were like, oh, it's nothing. It's probably just a cyst. It's this, that, and the other. And we were like, okay.
Well, I also had migraines. Mm-hmm. That started really bad.
Okay.
And I was tired. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd go fishing. I'd sleep, fall asleep on the boat. Like, that's weird. Yeah. I never do that.
And fishing's...
And in the cold, if it was windy and the sun wasn't out in the summer.
Yeah. So, but at this point, it sounds like at certain stages, you were able to tell the doctors kind of what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, and they, like, hey, something's not right. You know, like, hey, there's a bump here.
I knew something was wrong. And even telling my family, I knew they just... probably thought it was nothing at all.
We always hoped it was nothing.
Well, yes, but still, everyone didn't really, you know, they don't really think about it too deeply. And then, so I just kind of was like, well, I'm going to get this figured out because something's wrong and I'm having these headaches. Maybe that connects. And then each appointment, basically, I mentioned the migraines, being tired, and they kind of all put it together once they found out it was a
cancerous
thing?
Yeah, it was
tumor.
Epidermoid.
Oh, sweet.
All these
carcinoma.
Words.
It was a weird name.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, can you add another word to you should have this necklace that just...
yeah, keeps going.
And so, and you were saying that they did a really good job because you can barely tell where they... because they had to slice part of your neck.
Yeah, they went like here to... there, like a S almost.
Okay.
Yeah, they went up behind her ear and down and took out her parotid gland. Not carotid, but parotid, which is your saliva gland.
Okay.
Took the whole thing out.
So, and we're now in April of 2026, recording this. Mm-hmm. I don't know when we'll air it, but April of 2026. Feeling pretty decent?
Yeah. I'm very healthy. I think you can wait. Yeah, I feel good. It's just there is a lot of, like, sad memories. There's a lot of positive memories. There's a lot of when will this end? But if you just keep going and going, and it just got better and less hard and thinking about it. And I'm not very scared to get cancer really anymore because this happened so many times already,
which is wild.
And it's just
I would think that because you've been up and down that road a few times, you were sharing that ahead of time that this might be something with you for the rest of your life, but I guess if you're healthy, you know, do you have to, are you got regular checkups every year? They're kind of monitoring, I would think.
Yeah, more of the recent one. The one when I was little, that one's like every 2 years?
Every 2 years, she goes and sees her transplant team.
Okay.
Yeah, but they will check up and make sure everything's okay.
Yeah, so you walk in the door and go... I'm here.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's kind of like...
let's get this over with.
You're always excited to see her. I think she's a beacon of hope to the doctors, too. I mean, they go through... there's a lot of kids with cancer in our communities. We just don't see it probably in our face so much. But there's a lot of them, and a lot of them don't make it.
Right.
Especially with her form of leukemia. All of them we know do and not survive. So
a lot of cancer survivors have different... call that
after effects.
Like me, it's more of like, for mine, I guess, like I don't have ache, so I can't have kids, and I have to be careful with my teeth, like watching my teeth and my skin. I have to be very careful about that.
And you mentioned my eyes.
Just yes, cataracts.
I have cataracts, and I get hot flashes, and anyone who's, like, older than 40 is like, no, you don't. You don't get hot flashes.
Yes, she does.
I do.
Well, because your immune system is totally different. Mm-hmm, your immune system got totally whacked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know a better medical term to say than
it did.
Than that. And I take medicine still to be kind of somewhat normal physically inside.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, her body doesn't create vitamin D.
And estrogen.
Or estrogen. So she has, it's kind of like she is a 48-year-old woman. You know, she could definitely relate to somebody having a
22-year-old's body.
No.
Yeah,
yeah. No. Yeah.
Well, you know, I kind of chuckle because, you know, we were talking ahead of time that, you know, things that you're going, oh, mom, oh, dad, you know, and I'm gonna put it out there. You're probably not gonna like me for this, but
it's okay.
You started doing something because you are thankful for life.
Very thankful.
And you don't know what tomorrow's gonna bring. You know, the good Lord has our date.
That's right.
You know, we just don't. He doesn't share that with us.
He doesn't.
But you started doing something. How long ago that now you get 2 birthdays a year?
Yeah, we started celebrating half birthdays because I didn't know if Brie was going to make it to her 9th birthday. So when her half birthday rolled around, I was like, I'm making a cake. We're doing cupcakes. We're doing something. I bought her. I remember I wrapped her gift up and I was like thinking, well, we're going to celebrate half birthdays now. So whatever. And then when she relapsed, I was glad I was doing it. I mean, when we started doing it for our other kids too, it just was fun. And now I made her cupcakes or if they want cookies.
And I know that sometimes you're probably going to roll your eyes going, oh, mom.
I might not buy him a gift anymore.
Well, it's sometimes nice to see some cupcakes on the table, though.
Well, I was going to say, she knows what you like.
Yeah.
It helped me, though.
Yeah.
I did it selfishly. I was trying to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do a lot of things out of selfishness to feel better, you know, like that. I mean, I did a lot of different things. I would reach out to the community and say, hey, help me. You know, I want to have a Hollywood party for Brie. Somebody help me.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to ask for help.
I did.
And reach out.
They would provide. And they did. And it made me feel better. And then selfishly, I did do it to be able to breathe. Like I could, there was some nights I would just lay awake thinking, what am I going to do? What is going to happen to our family? How are we going to survive this? You know, it was like we were on pause.
Yeah, I did feel like that.
Because when one person in your family has cancer, it's really hard for everybody to even move forward a little bit. Or if there's a celebration with one child, it's really hard for the other one. You know, it's just, it's very complicated.
Well, and faith, support of family, friends, strangers.
Yes, complete strangers.
I know you reached out to me and it's like, how many tapes you need? Let's get them.
That was so nice though. And then she was able to watch all of her home videos.
Yeah.
Can I add something?
You sure can. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
The Discover Montcalm podcast wants to thank West Michigan Technology and Design Solutions, WGLM, 106.3 FM, DW Video, Blueberry Podcast Platform, and Business Growth Engine. Thank you for your community support.
Another thing that you can experience after having cancer, and it doesn't matter which kind of cancer, there's a lot of organizations that reach out to you. Or there's obviously the news and... but there's trips, like there's foundations, they'll take you, like I went to Colorado and I was able to hunt. It was like the hunt of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different foundations, or the Send It Foundation that I went to last year. I went to California.
Okay.
And these are all like, adult adolescence cancer survivor.
Like 30 and under.
Yeah.
To 20.
When you're a kid, there's like cancer camps. You can go to. Mm-hmm. When you get older, you are like, oh, I wonder if there's other things. Well, there is, so that's really good.
Yep. Well, because there's people out there that are trying to help, and in some way, they don't know how.
Yeah.
You know, true. So I would think that this is probably, I mean, there's different organizations all over the place.
For me, it was important for Bree to connect with other children or adult, even when she was a young adult. I wanted her to connect with other people her age that were dealing with the same stuff, because there's nobody that she can relate to. Like, right. Those support systems can be really life-changing, and you don't feel so alone or so hopeless.
Yeah. I mean, because as we were talking, everybody's cancer is different. Mm-hmm. How did that help you talking to other people your age that maybe, you know, is it just a typical kid conversation, or is it a little bit like, hey, I'm on this many cc's of this, you know? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I really
like
don't.
When I was little.
Yeah, I mean, or even
when
today.
As a young adult, when you went to the Sendit.
Yeah. Oh, when I was a kid, it was kind of like, I mean, I was just in La La Land, and everyone knew, so I didn't feel like I had to explain it to anyone my age, because they kind of knew already, because their parents explained it as best they could to them.
Right.
That's true.
And then the rest are just bullies, so just ignore those.
But you said that, you know, now as a young adult, does it help talking to somebody?
Yes.
That and do you remember the first time you actually got to talk to somebody that actually was, you know, or do you remember an occasion that you went, wow, I'm not alone, you know?
Matt?
Yeah, probably at some of the few first cancer camps. So I would have been 11,
okay.
12. So I remembered that I was a decent age and could have conversations. We'd go around in a circle at camp, talk about our cancers and our life stories.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really emotional place. They have a big group dance at the end, and you're all like, put your arms together and you sway in a circle, and it's like everyone's crying. It's like very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
You grow with those people in a week, like instantly, like brothers and sisters. It was amazing.
Are you still connected with somebody?
Mm-hmm. Yes. At least 5 or 6 of them from different camps too.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, we all connect with people. Mm-hmm. And there's certain people that we come together based on an occurrence, you know, whether it's a love for this or a love for that, or in your case, a bad situation. I'll turn the question to you. At what point did you talk to other parents that were going through this? You know, because it's like, you know, because talking to me, I try to be sympathetic.
Yeah.
But I haven't walked in your shoes.
Right. The first night I was at the hospital with Bree, I messaged a friend of mine that I knew vaguely. I mean, we weren't really close, but her daughter or her son had had leukemia years prior in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And I messaged her and I said, Bree has leukemia, and she came to the hospital the next day. And, you know, we became friends with some of the other parents on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
She had a really good friend who was diagnosed the exact same day as her with the exact same type of leukemia. So they were on the same treatment path. So
wow.
We really connected with her parents. And Bree and Bridget became really good friends. And they even came to Bree's wedding in October. Like, we're still connected to them. And I started a Facebook group because I couldn't figure out how to reach some of the parents on the floor. You can't, because of HIPAA. Like, I would ask the nurse and they would say, you can't. I can't tell you which one of these parents has a child with cancer.
Yeah.
So I started a Facebook group that's now regulated by a couple of different people to make sure that it's only parents of kids that are being treated at Helen DeVos for pediatric cancers.
Right.
And that was it was just nice. I didn't feel so alone again. Like, we were able to connect and share resources.
Right.
And hey, we're going to be in the clinic. Who else is going to be in the clinic? You know, and I'd know someone would be there and she could, you know, hang out with someone while she was getting an infusion. It was just, I don't know, it was just kind of nice to have the people that can understand.
Through a bad situation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that, so, you know, you were able to meet a guy, get married,
mm-hmm.
You know, and he knew all about this. Was he a high school friend or did somebody, you know, I don't want to go down a personal journey, but.
No, it's okay. Yeah. Yeah, he was from high school. The word, everyone kind of knew, like, you know, the Bree, there's the one who had cancer. Yep. It's literally my name was that, sadly. But he didn't know, like, details at all. He knew vaguely because his friend, I ended up dating his friend first. Mm-hmm. But later on, then senior year, we became, yeah, we were together. We actually got in a car accident together.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's how we, you know, started liking each other.
Yeah. Well, nothing like something terrible to bring, you know.
Yep.
But he went to a different school.
No. Okay.
For first through eighth grade. So he didn't know the like, he wasn't a part of that.
Okay.
Like most of those kids in Greenville.
Went to a Catholic school.
Yeah.
But in high schools.
Yeah.
Where everybody was together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're newly married.
Yes.
You know.
And he knew, like, even when I told him more about it, because that's the first thing I do. Spill all the trauma about, you know, everything.
Yeah. Here's what you're dating.
Here's what you get. I haven't told him that I couldn't have kids right away.
Yeah.
And he was really great about it. He was great about all of it, really understanding as best as he could. I mean, sometimes that's a lot to understand, but.
Well, it is. And, you know, fortunately, in this day and age, there are options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you're ready for that option or not ready for that option, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's got to be nice that you now have somebody that can, another person that can walk beside you as you're going through whatever the path may be. You know, which is, you know, we've talked about a journey. You know, we talked about a family's journey here. And, you know, as I go to wrap this up, is there any closing words? I don't know of encouragement, advice, you know, can you, you know, I guess I'm kind of at a loss here, but, you know, is there something that we can leave it with? We'll start with Mom.
Okay.
Because that way gives Bree a little time to be thinking about what she might want to say. But, you know, anything that you can close us out with here?
You know, I don't know where everybody is at spiritually, but I do feel like if you are seeking something, keep seeking. And to have the hope of something bigger than what we are here on this earth for, and to understand that we live in a broken world where kids get cancer,
mm-hmm.
adults get cancer. I just think that the spirituality piece is so important. I cannot imagine walking through this without it. I also would like to encourage people to reach out to their community. I do believe that God created us to be in community with each other and to be there for each other. And even if it's just making somebody cookies or a meal, I mean, that is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the money, even if you just pray for them.
Right.
Or send them a card that says, I'm thinking about you.
Yeah.
If you don't pray, you know.
Send them a box.
Yes. Anything.
Say, make something with this
shoebox I have.
Yes.
And this glitter paint. Okay.
Well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bree, any closing thoughts here?
I kind of, over like the years of all that in my life and growing up, I've always had a part of me that tries to make some kind of positivity or...
Yeah.
Through any situation that's like negative or bad, there's always some kind of light you can find, but you have to choose to find that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all up to you if you want positivity in your life and want to look at the bright side and, or just, you know, stay in the negative side.
Which we hope people don't.
Right. Yeah.
But one thing that you both have said throughout this interview is that there are organizations, you know, so when you're given a bad scenario, yes, it's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, but reach out to say, okay, who can help me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't be afraid to ask. And I think that was something that you said you realized after you were in this journey a little bit.
You're blessing them
yeah.
by asking them. And a lot of the people that have started these organizations have been in the very painful place that you may be at now. Maybe they had a loved one that died of cancer or had cancer, and they felt an emptiness or where their need needed to be filled, and they couldn't find it. And they want you to reach out. If you can just make that make that first step, it will come back around. I mean, I just would encourage people to reach out to other people that have been
people
there.
People want to help mm-hmm. other people, I feel like.
Me too.
And sometimes just saying, how can I help you? And maybe mm-hmm. you don't know at the time.
Right.
You know, which is fine. There are a lot of support systems around West Michigan that are out there. Is there any that you would like to bring to the surface in this interview? And I'm sure that, you know, you're probably going to miss somebody. You know, as soon as you drive home, you're going to go, well, but is there some organization that maybe, you know, other than the support within the hospitals, is there anything out there that you might be able to pass along, or is that?
Gosh, there's so many. I wouldn't even know where to begin. I do know that if you have a child with cancer, they're different. You know, there's the pediatric oncology resource team. There's children's cancer. I mean, there's all kinds of different things for kids. Make-A-Wish,
right.
You know. For adults, there's Gilda's Club. But you can also, that's also for pediatric patients as well.
And if you're not sure, call them.
Yeah.
I'm sure they can help.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because if you don't fit into this box, mm-hmm. those organizations know of other places.
I started with an internet search. My daughter has cancer. She's 8. What do I do? And I'm not kidding you. It was like, I can do a lot.
Okay.
I can do a lot of things. I got literature for myself from the Children's Leukemia Foundation. The Leukemia Lymphoma Society offered us money. I mean, there's people come out of the woodwork. It's just organizations I didn't even know about. They would say, oh, here's this. I mean, there was one in Grand Rapids that's called We Do Care. And it was, they wanted to buy Bree either something to communicate with at home, so like an iPad, a computer, or something like that. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah. Well, so it's there, but don't be afraid.
No, don't. Ask. Because they are doing it because they want to, and they actually have things to give. And sometimes the organizations have a hard time making that connection because of HIPAA.
Right.
You can't just call the hospital and be like, hey, we want to come down and deliver an iPad to a child that, you know.
You can't.
No,
you
cannot.
Do that. So.
Which is good and bad.
Do the internet search.
Mm-hmm.
Ask the doctors. Ask the nurses, you know, what is available. I'm sure mm-hmm.
they
you know, can
do
help.
Have social workers. I would highly recommend that, too. They can help you with, like, therapists. We got a lot of connections through the social worker. They're the ones that told us about the camps for Bree to go to
mm-hmm.
and encourage us to reach out to Gilda's Club.
Those camps are very helpful for survivors. They have, I mean, it's not really a group or anything we found, but those the most, like Camp Make a Dream, mm-hmm. Camp Catch a Rainbow.
I'm sure it kind of made you feel maybe a little more, I hate to use this word, normal,
mm-hmm.
or more a kid.
It did. I get to have fun.
You know, and because you're going through all of this, but it's a camp that probably has medical people on
nurses,
staff.
Nurses, yes. Oncologists.
Yeah,
yes.
Nurses. That are,
they're
that
right are, there for anything. There's some people going through treatment while being at the camp.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. There's stuff like that. Like, it's extreme, and it's amazing what they can do. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank the two of you, and I want to, you know, I know that when I reached out to you, you're like, oh, I don't know if I want.
You know. Let me ask Bree.
Oh, yeah. Scary.
But I'm glad that the two of you made it here, shared your story. Hopefully, it offers some sense of hope. You know, and we know that not everything comes out glorious.
Right.
You know, that there's a other side
there
of that.
Is.
But there's also hope. If it doesn't turn out, there's people there for support.
There are.
You know, so I guess it depends on which direction.
That's
and we're
true.
We're glad. You know, I mean, I watching your mom's Facebook page.
Yeah,
and, you know,
me too.
I guess I watched you grow up without ever meeting you, you know, but so it's nice that you're here today. So
Thank you. On
that note, you can follow the Discover Montcalm podcast at discovermontcalmpodcast.com on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, as well as on Pandora, Apple Podcast, and iHeart. Google Discover Montcalm and you'll find me. If you have a story, whether it's heartfelt in this particular case, or you grew up in the county, or you run a business here and you want to share what your services are, if you have an organization, 231-250-9624 is my number. Reach out, discovermontcalmpodcast.com. If there's a way that we can tell your story that might help others or even help your business, give me a call. That's what I'm here for. And on that note, remember to buy and shop locally.
Discover Montcalm Podcast is produced by content creator Dwayne Weed, celebrating 40 years at DW Video and Multimedia LLC at dwvideo.com or call 231-250-9624.